What a wonderful gift Karen just gave us this morning. Thank you. A few weeks ago, you may recall Karen and Jackie having a conversation over here about vulnerability. When I heard them speaking, something triggered my imagination, and I started thinking, decision-making requires a lot of vulnerability. Decision-making requires risk, and especially trust in ourselves and trust that everything's going to work out okay. And it's really out of that conversation that I built our message today. Research shows us that we make around 35,000 decisions a day. 35,000. I was telling my best friend this a couple weeks ago, and she lives in Denver, and she said, "How can that be? That's not even possible. There aren't even that many minutes." And I started thinking, well, it really is possible. If you just think about all the little micro decisions you made just to come here today, you know, maybe you hit snooze for the second or third time. Maybe you looked out of the window and said, "Nope, not today. It's wintry. I'm going to watch from home," right? And then you get to church, and then you make 1,000 more decisions. Should I get out of my pew? Should I share a joy and sorrow? Should I take risks? Should I be vulnerable? Should I tell people what's going on with me? By the end of the day, our brains are taxed. The emotional toll of making decisions, second-guessing them, and doubting our choices really can wear on us. We make so many decisions today in our modern world that psychologists have coined the terms decision fatigue and decision paralysis. The first term, decision fatigue, refers to our declining interest in making decisions, especially as the day wears on. So we might start out the morning fresh, but by lunchtime, we really don't care if we order the salad or Reuben, just get it over with. My body needs to eat. But decision paralysis can occur when we can't decide at all. We either have too many choices to choose from, or we're afraid we're going to make the wrong choice. This is especially difficult for people that maybe have made choices that have hurt them in the past, or have had decisions made for them without their input. When we get to decision paralysis, we make no choice at all. But that's still a choice. Making no choice is still a choice. Peggy Bell recently gave me a book to review by Jen Sincero, and it's called You Are a Badass: How to Stop Doubting Your Greatness and Start Living an Awesome Life. And towards the end of the book, the author says, "Deciding is freedom. Indecision is torture." And I started thinking about that. Is indecision torture? It is in our American economy, right? We're always needing to decide, to go, to go, 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 go. To Sharon's point this morning, I'm a go, go, go person. It's really hard for me by the end of the day. I'm pretty worn out making decisions on the fly all the time. But what if it didn't have to be torture to make decisions? Or what if we just didn't make decisions at all and we just sat still? We just practiced sitting still today, this morning. When's the last time we really just sat still, checked in with ourselves, listened to our breathing? I think we torture ourselves because we feel like we have to make decisions. Our culture tells us that we have to make decisions. Decisions about our careers, our future, our relationships, our friendships, decisions about the church, when to participate, how to participate, etc. Sometimes, yes, we do have to make decisions. Other times, perhaps it's okay not to decide, to just sit with all the ideas and all the decisions, sit with them and be still, and let it be. I read a comic recently that highlights decision paralysis. There was a couple sitting at a table, and the man says, "I can't make decisions right now. What if it's the wrong call? Everything's so uncertain right now. The world's turned upside down. Maybe I should just wait and see." And then the comic pans out, and it shows a waitress there with pen and paper, and she says, "I think you still need a minute." Sometimes our brains are like this, right? Maybe we just need to step back and take a minute and get back to ourselves. When decision fatigue or decision paralysis hits, we may feel like throwing in the towel, quitting, heading for the hills, or that forest bathing retreat we bookmarked maybe a year ago. We want to escape. Americans spend millions of dollars trying to escape. Our modern society does not allow everyday space for slowing down and turning inward. And yes, I teach sociology, so I'm going to give you a little bit of that here. In a German sociologist, one of our founding fathers, Max Weber, wrote the book, The Protestant Work Ethic in the Spirit of Capitalism. And in his book, he explored how the Protestant religion feeds the machine of capitalism. The Protestant work ethic calls us to do more with less, to serve God by doing, being busy. And we work ourselves to the bone in order to do this. Even if we don't believe in a Protestant God, we are still influenced by this culture. The Protestant work ethic calls us to honor God here on earth with our work while we pine for a better life in the sky when we die. And even though I personally don't subscribe to this, I find myself inevitably impacted by its influence on our modern capitalist society. We find ourselves burning the candle at both ends, at a crossroads, not knowing what move to make next, and not giving ourselves time to quiet our minds and really check in. In fact, we may turn everywhere else other than inward. In my years as a counselor, I had many clients ask me for advice. Should I stay or go in my relationship? Should I confront a relative or stay quiet? Should I apply to this new job or stay at my old one? And I'd help them, you know, all the self-help books tell you what to do. Weigh the pros and cons, make a list, remember you're a badass, stick to your guns, right? But I would never tell them what to do. And this irked some of my clients, and they tried to find ways to skirt around this, tried to eke out an answer. Well, what would you do if you were in my position? What would you do if you were in my shoes? And I had to admit they were pretty clever in their desperation for an answer. But I began to wonder, why is it we sometimes prefer decisions be made for us? And I think the answer is quite clear. It's easier. First off, maybe we're suffering from decision fatigue or decision paralysis. We're so busy in our lives making decisions that getting a break and having somebody else make a decision for us sounds pretty nice. According to the Pew Research Center, women are calling the shots far more often than men when it comes to family life, household, and relationship decisions. If you're the one in your household that predominantly makes decisions about medical appointments, banking, grocery shopping, meal planning, holidays, travel, etc., cut yourself some slack in all areas of your life, because it's a lot. It's a lot to make these decisions. But then I thought, why else might we prefer decisions be made for us, other than the fact that maybe it's easier and maybe we want a break? And I think it's because if the decision goes south or falls apart, maybe we could shift that blame away from ourselves and onto the counselor that told us to do X, Y, and Z. It was, you know, some bad advice from a friend or the miscalculation of a parent. It was my spouse's fault, not mine. We want to avoid that self-blame because it doesn't feel good to be wrong. And we've all had experience being wrong and making decisions that didn't work out. It makes us question ourselves, am I doing the right thing? And this can lead to self-doubt. So what if we make the wrong decisions? What happens? Maybe that's just part of our growth. So in the poem I read, Robert Frost's poem, The Road Not Taken, the paths diverging into the woods, some say, represent a crucial point in our lives. Not a micro everyday type decision, but more significant than that. But it can be one of the most widely misinterpreted poems because scholars find really what Robert Frost meant by his poem was that maybe there are two roads that end up in the same place anyways, and it's our ego in taking one that makes us think we had the decision after all. Upon a closer read, we can see both paths lead to the same point. The point of the poem is that we deceive ourselves into thinking our decisions and choices make all the difference in the world. But really, whatever path we choose, we end up exactly where we are supposed to be. That's the point of Robert Frost's poem. Maybe our agonizing over decisions is a result of our ego, of believing we really have more power to affect our path than we really do. Many of us buy into that Protestant work ethic, or are at least influenced by it. If we just work hard enough, if we just made the right decisions, we will achieve our goals. We will reach to the top. We will finally have progress. But maybe we are exactly where we are supposed to be. Maybe it doesn't matter what path we take. They're diverging in the woods all the time, and we're going to end up exactly where we should be. Perhaps we need to trust ourselves, get back to ourselves. But how exactly do we do this, other than reading a bunch of self-help books and going to therapy? To illustrate this point, I'm going to share my personal journey of my own turning inward. When I first arrived here at the Unitarian Church about 10 years ago, I want to say, I was deep down in the hole of self-doubt. I had been so sure of my first marriage that only a few weeks after dating my first husband, I called my best friend and I told her, "I'm going to marry him." She said, "Do not tell him that." After only 2 years of marriage, he left to chase his own American dream. I moved back from Denver, degreeless, carless, homeless, with only a suitcase and a 2-year-old toddler. I came home to Meadville, the place I swore I would never set foot in again. How had I been so wrong? How could I ever trust myself again? In a matter of a week, I was a divorced, single mom trying to get back on my feet. Lisbeth Searle White gathered what I call the coven of sage UU women to help me assess my resources. Cynthia Burton was there. Many of you remember her. Emmy Boughton was there. The team got out white butcher block paper and a whiteboard. We met over here in the parish house. For over an hour, these women helped me understand that I was going to be okay. Many of them I had never met before. They also had me fully convinced that I needed to move to Pittsburgh or DC immediately for job prospects. Needless to say, I stayed. I made Meadville my home again. But I was still making decisions out of a place of anxiety, asking everyone other than myself what I should be doing. Where should I live? My mom told me. Where should my child go to preschool? I started polling local parents, including John Hyatt. Where should I work? A friend let me know. I was not operating from a place within. I had been uprooted, and I was clearly in crisis mode. And I'll be honest, I stayed there for about 4 years. Then I got sober. I started intentionally taking care of myself, which mostly involved playing in the woods. But most importantly, in just the smallest ways, I started listening to my heart and my gut instead of my head. I let myself love again, which was really, really scary. And all that past, those decisions I thought I made poorly, actually helped me bond to Alan. He was also a single parent whose partner had left. We had shared, disrupted, anxious selves, and we could talk to each other about it. Maybe I hadn't taken the wrong path after all. Maybe, like Frost's poem, my path had led to the same place where I was supposed to be. Next year, 2025, I will finish my degree, the PhD I started 10 years ago but had to leave. I will celebrate 10 years of love with my honey, Alan. And Irie will celebrate her 2-year adoption journey with Alan. Irie and Annalise have been in each other's lives for about 11 years, creating the closest bond between siblings I have ever seen. We don't know what the next 10 years will hold. I may lose myself again for a time, but I will always come back to that deeper knowing. When I was young, I just knew things. It was simple. And I think I lost that, and it's come back now. I knew flowers brought me happiness. I knew I loved my brother more than anything else. I knew the neighborhood girl down the road gave me a bad, creepy feeling and to stay away from her. I knew things because I listened. I had less distraction back then, no cell phones, no internet, and yes, I grew up in a house without a television. I was connected to the earth, and quite literally too. I hardly ever wore shoes, and I just ran barefoot in the woods. Psychologist Emily Hancock interviewed women for her dissertation and found a pattern emerging where adult women would reminisce about bygone days of their childhood, the days where they felt free. And it was about the ages between 8 and 10. This theme in her research she called the girl within. The girl within knew that what she was made of. She was often considered a tomboy by others. She was interested in exploring the world, curious in her play. But as the years went on, the girl within began to disappear. She was covered up by expectations of how to behave in society. She was consumed by balancing career goals and family life. And Dr. Hancock found this wild and fierce inner self was quickly replaced by the self-doubting teen years, which carried many of these women into their adult lives. But many of these women had found something that had awakened them, like my divorce and my moving back here to Meadville did. Sometimes it was a career change, sometimes it was a life change, a death in the family or retirement. But something that shook them, that woke up the girl within, it loosened them and challenged them to return to that place of the deeply known self. Maybe there is a child within you that has been buried for a long time beneath what others consider poor failures or poor choices. Maybe you're afraid you're going to make the wrong decision again, or maybe you just feel stuck. But it's time for us. I encourage all of you to make a promise to get back to yourself, to reconnect to that solid place where we're free to just be ourselves. I find nowadays I still ask for advice, but it's different. I don't need people's opinions because I already know the answer has to come from within me. If it doesn't come from a deeper place within me, the decision won't be mine, and it won't work for me anyways. To be clear, I'm not advocating for not asking for help ever. Ask for help, just don't get stuck there, jumping from advice to advice. Call up a trusted friend and share your stuck place. Better yet, call up all your ancestors. Ask for wisdom. Call up any and every being to support you. When I'm in my stuck place, I call upon Anya. Anya's a popular Celtic goddess and fairy queen. She's revered in Ireland for her protection over nature and livestock, but she's also the goddess of risk. And like I said, decision-making always involves some level of risk. Anya encourages mortals, in the words of Doreen Virtue, to take a leap of faith, to put your true heart's desire into action. When I'm at a crossroads, I call upon Anya to help guide me back to my heart, to make a decision that will serve me and my family best. Some people like yoga, tai chi, or meditation. I've tried many forms over the years, and the sit quiet for hours meditation just doesn't suit me. My heart is still in nature, so I head to the woods. I pound my feet into the earth, and I let all my self-doubt flow beneath the soil. Being in the woods helps me re-root. I imagine roots from my feet digging deep into the damp earth. I feel myself grounding. I make decisions then from this grounded place. And that's just what speaks to me. Only you know what feeds your soul. And if you don't yet, try everything wholesome you can until something connects with you. There may be a still small child, a girl, a boy within, waiting to be set loose. There may be roots waiting for the damp earth. There may be a flame that is waiting to be fanned bright again. Be still. Let it be, even if it's unknown, especially if it's unknown. Get back to yourself. Find yourself if you've forgotten who you are and what you are made of. In the words of the Beatles, there will be an answer. Let it be.